We'll begin with aerodynamic terms. The angle of attack is the angle between the chord line of the airfoil and the relative wind. By adjusting the flight controls, you can adjust the angle of attack. The chord line is an imaginary straight line that runs from the leading edge of the wing to the trailing edge of the wing. You could also say from the leading edge of the airfoil to the trailing edge of the airfoil. Relative wind is the wind that the airfoil experiences. It's the wind that the wing feels. It's created by the movement of air past the wing, by the motion of the airfoil through the air, or by a combination of the two. By a combination of the two, meaning the movement of the air past the airfoil or the movement of the airfoil through the air, it's the same thing. Relative wind is parallel to and in the opposite direction to the flight path of the airfoil. There are three axes about which the aircraft rotates: the vertical axis, the lateral axis, and the longitudinal axis. Let's take a look at each of those. These axes are imaginary straight lines that run from one point to another. They all intersect at the center of gravity. Let's visualize what the lateral axis looks like. The lateral axis is an imaginary line running from the tip of one wing to the tip of the other wing. Rotation about this axis is called pitch. Pitch is controlled by the elevators. The longitudinal axis is an imaginary line running from the front of the airplane to the very rear of the airplane, from the nose to the tail. Rotation about the longitudinal axis is called roll. Roll is controlled by the ailerons. The vertical axis is an imaginary line extending vertically through the intersection of the lateral and the longitudinal axes. It extends from the top of the airplane straight down through the bottom of the airplane. Rotation about the vertical axis is called yaw, Y-A-W. Yaw is the rotation that's controlled by the rudder. The center of gravity is a point where all the weight of the airplane is concentrated. It's the point at which the airplane would balance itself if it were suspended from that point. The three axes, longitudinal, lateral, and vertical, all intersect at the center of gravity. Aircraft designers normally ensure that the aircraft will be stable with regard to pitch. A pilot can affect the longitudinal stability of an airplane by allowing the center of gravity to move forward or aft. And if the center of gravity is forward or aft of its specified limits through improper loading procedures, one of the undesirable characteristics might be either excessive lateral stability or the inability to recover from a stalled condition. If the CG is loaded aft of its aft limit, that would make the aircraft inherently unstable, and it would limit its ability to recover from a stalled condition. Whereas if the CG were too far forward, the aircraft would be extremely stable. The undesirable effect would be the inability to raise the nose during landing. The location of the center of gravity with respect to the center of lift determines the longitudinal stability of the airplane. An airplane will be less stable at all airspeeds if it's loaded to the most aft CG. An advantage of an airplane said to be inherently stable is that it requires less effort to control. Unless you have a T-tail airplane, changes in the pitch can also be experienced with changes in power setting. When power is reduced, there's a corresponding reduction in the downwash on the tail, which results in the nose pitching down or the tail rising. This, of course, is rotation about the lateral axis. Thrust is the forward force which is produced by the propeller. the propeller acts as an airfoil to displace a large amount of air to the rear of the airplane. The propeller of an airplane, the wing of an airplane, or the blade of a helicopter are all airfoils. Drag is the rearward acting force which resists the forward movement of the airplane through the air. Drag acts parallel to and in the same direction as the relative wind. Drag may be classified into two types: parasite drag and induced drag. Parasite drag is the resistance of the air by any part of the airplane that does not produce lift, struts, the landing gear, the lights, anything that sticks out into the airflow, such as antennas. Parasite drag increases as airspeed increases. The more streamlined an object is, the less parasite drag it creates. The more dense the air moving past the airplane, the greater the parasite drag, and the larger the size of the object in the airstream, the greater the parasite drag. As speed increases, the amount of parasite drag increases. If speed is doubled, four times as much drag is produced. So you could say that if the speed is doubled, the drag quadruples, the parasite drag quadruples. Induced drag is the other type of drag. Induced drag and parasite drag are the two forms of drag. I just got through talking about parasite drag. Let's talk about induced drag. Induced drag is a byproduct of the production of lift. In other words, induced drag is created as the wing develops lift. There's high pressure beneath the wing, which is trying to flow around and over the wing. That high pressure is trying to get into an area of low pressure above the wing. This causes a vortex behind the wingtip. This vortex induces a span-wise flow of air and creates vortices all along the trailing edge of the wing. As the angle of attack is increased up to the critical angle of attack, lift will also be increased, and so will the vortices and downwash. This downwash redirects the lift vector rearward, causing a rearward component of lift, which is induced drag. Induced drag will increase as airspeed decreases. During unaccelerated straight and level flight, the four aerodynamic forces which act on the airplane are said to be in equilibrium. In other words, lift equals weight and thrust equals drag. Let's talk about lift. Air is a gas which can be compressed or expanded. Air is also a fluid. When compressed, more air can occupy a given volume, and the air density is said to be increased. When allowed to expand, air occupies a greater space, and the density is decreased. Air density has a significant effect on the aircraft's performance, and air density is affected by the temperature, atmospheric pressure, and the atmospheric humidity. Bernoulli's principle states that as the velocity of a fluid, gas or liquid, increases, its pressure decreases. Lift, the low pressure on the top of the wing, is the result of a pressure difference between the top and the bottom of the wing. A wing is designed to accelerate air over the top camber of the wing, thereby decreasing the pressure on the top and producing lift. That's why a wing is shaped the way it is. The upper part of the wing has a greater surface than the bottom part of the wing. There's more surface on the top of the wing, and the air molecules have to travel faster to get from the leading edge to the trailing edge over the top. In order to travel faster, their velocity has to increase, and as the velocity increases, its pressure decreases. Several factors are involved in the creation of lift. The low pressure above the wing is part of why the wing produces lift. The other part, significant part, is that there's higher pressure underneath the wing. The high pressure underneath the wing is responsible for more of the lift than the low pressure above the wing. But several factors are involved in the creation of lift. The angle of attack, the wing area and the shape of the wing, the velocity of the air, and the air density. All of these factors have an effect on the amount of lift produced at any given moment. The pilot can actively control the angle of attack and the airspeed. and increasing either of these will result in an increase in lift. Decreasing the angle of attack or decreasing the airspeed will result in a decrease in lift. Weight is quite straightforward and simple. Weight is the force with which gravity attracts all bodies toward the center of the Earth. Pretty heavy, but that's it. It's very simple. One of the main functions of flaps during approach and landing is to, the answer is, increase the angle of descent without increasing the airspeed. Flaps increase the camber of the wing and the angle of attack of a wing when they are extended. This increases the wing lift, and it also increases induced drag. The increased drag enables the pilot to make steeper approaches to a landing without an increase in airspeed. When approaching to land under visual flight rules at night, the approach and the landing should be made the same as during the daytime. The use of flaps increases lift and increases drag. Ground effect occurs when the aircraft is flown pretty close to the surface, within one wingspan or less above the surface. When the aircraft is this close to the ground, there's a reduction in induced drag because the air flowing around the wing is modified by the air striking the surface of the Earth. These changes result in the aircraft being able to get airborne at a speed below the speed necessary for sustained flight. The airplane has a tendency to float during an approach to landing, and within ground effect during takeoff, it has a tendency to jump into the air and become airborne prior to reaching a airspeed which is required for flight. When an airplane is taking off and leaves ground effect, in order to maintain the same amount of lift, the angle of attack will have to be increased, which will require an increase of thrust. So the thing to be careful about with ground effect is on takeoff, the airplane will have a tendency to get airborne prior to reaching a safe speed for flight. And during landing, because of ground effect, the aircraft will have a tendency to float. The rectangular course is a training maneuver in which the ground track of the airplane is equidistant from all sides of a selected rectangular area on the ground, such as an airport boundary. Altitude and airspeed should be held constant while performing the rectangular course. The objective of the rectangular course is to develop division of attention between the flight path and the ground references while controlling the airplane and watching for other traffic. Another objective is to develop the ability to recognize wind drift toward or away from a line that's parallel to the intended ground track. This is helpful in recognizing drift toward or away from an airport runway while you're flying various legs of the airport traffic pattern. The closer the track of the airplane is to the field boundaries, the steeper the bank necessary at the turning points. The things that you need to know for the written test about a rectangular course is that when planning a rectangular course, the flight path should be positioned outside the field boundaries, just far enough that they may be easily observed from either pilot seat. And the closer the track of the airplane is to the field boundaries, the steeper the bank necessary at the turning points. Other maneuver we're going to talk about is turns around a point. When flying turns around a point, the wings will be in alignment with the ground reference pylon only during the time the airplane is flying directly upwind or directly downwind. At all other points, a wind correction angle will keep the wings from pointing directly at the pylon. If you are instructed not to exceed a 45 degree bank in a turn around a point, the best place to start is the point where the bank angle will be steepest, flying downwind. Throughout the remainder of the maneuver, the bank will be shallowed out. The ground speed will be equal where the airplane is flying with the same headwind component. The angle of bank will be the same only when the airplane is flying directly crosswind. In turns about a point, the airplane is flown in two or more complete circles of uniform radii from a prominent ground reference point using a maximum bank angle of approximately 45 degrees while maintaining a constant altitude. Just like in all other ground reference maneuvers, a constant radius around a point will, if any wind exists, require constantly changing angles of bank to correct for the changing wind. The closer the airplane is to a direct downwind heading when the ground speed is greatest, the steeper the bank, and the faster the rate of turn required to establish the proper wind correction angle. The more nearly your track is to a direct upwind heading when the ground speed is least, the shallower the bank and the slower the rate of turn required to establish the proper wind correction angle. Throughout the maneuver, the bank and the rate of turn must be gradually varied in proportion to your ground speed. When flying turns around a point, the wings will be in alignment with the pylon only during the time the airplane is flying directly upwind or directly downwind. At all other points, the wind correction angle will keep the wings from pointing directly at the pylon. If you are instructed not to exceed a 45 degree bank, the best place to start the point where the bank angle will be steepest is when flying downwind. Throughout the remainder of the maneuver, the bank will be shallowing out. The ground speed will be equal where the airplane is flying with the same headwind component. The angle of bank will be the same only where the airplane is flying directly crosswind. In turns around a point, at what point would the angle of bank be the same? Only when the airplane is flying directly crosswind. And at what point during turns around a point would the ground speed be equal? Only when the airplane is flying with the same headwind component, which means when it's flying upwind. Let's talk about S-turns across a road. An S-turn across a road is a practice maneuver in which the airplane's ground track describes semicircles of equal radii on each side of a selected straight line on the ground. The straight line may be a road, a fence, a railroad, or a section line that lies perpendicular to the wind and should be of sufficient length for making a series of turns. In other words, when you cross the road and your wings are level and lined up with the road, you should be either upwind or downwind. The maneuver consists of crossing a road at a 90-degree angle and immediately beginning a series of 180-degree turns of uniform radius in opposite directions, recrossing the road at a 90-degree angle just as each 180 degrees of turn is completed. To accomplish a constant radius ground track requires changing the roll rate and angle of bank to establish the wind correction angle. Both roll rate and the angle of bank will increase or decrease as ground speed increases or decreases. The higher ground speed requires a greater roll rate and angle of bank. The slower ground speed requires a decreased roll rate and a decreased angle of bank. The bank must be the steepest when beginning the turn on the downwind side of the road and must be shallowed gradually as the turn progresses from a downwind heading to an upwind heading. On the upwind side, the turn should be started with a relatively shallow angle of bank, then gradually steepened as the airplane turns from an upwind heading to a downwind heading. In a steep turn, the ground speed will be the same when the airplane has the same headwind component. The steepest angle of bank is required at points where the airplane is flying downwind. The airplane will have to be crabbed into the wind at the greatest amount when it is flying crosswind. In the first half of an S-turn, the bank should begin shallow and increase in steepness as the airplane turns crosswind and becomes steepest when the turn is downwind. If the turn is started with too steep a bank angle, the bank will increase too rapidly and the upwind half of the S will be smaller than the downwind half. The turn will not be completed by the time the airplane is over the reference line. So the question, while practicing S-turns, a consistently smaller half circle is made on one side of the road than the other, and this turn is not completed before crossing the road or reference line, this would most likely occur because the bank is increased too rapidly during the early part of the turn. Load is the force or the imposed stress that must be supported by an airplane structure in flight. The loads imposed on the wings in flight are stated in terms of load factor. In straight and level flight, the wings of an airplane support a load equal to the sum of the weight of the airplane plus its contents. This particular load factor is equal to what's referred to as 1G, where G refers to the force or the pull of gravity. However, a force called centrifugal force is generated, which acts toward the outside of a curve any time an airplane is flying in a curved flight path, such as during turns, climbs, or during descents. When an airplane is flying in a curved flight path with a positive load, the load that the wings must support will be equal to the weight of the airplane plus the load imposed by the centrifugal force. Therefore, it can be said that during level flight, turns increase the load factor of an airplane. As the angle of bank of a turn increases, the load factor increases. The amount of excess load that can be imposed on the wing of an airplane depends on the speed of the airplane. An example of this would be a change in direction made at high speed with abrupt control movement, which results in a high load factor being imposed. An increased load factor will cause the airplane to stall at a higher airspeed. Some conditions that increase the load of an aircraft are overloading the airplane, flying with too steep of an angle of bank, flying in turbulence, and abrupt movement of the flight controls. Because different types of operation require different maneuvers, and therefore varying bank angles and varying load factors, aircraft are separated into categories determined by the loads that their wing structures can support. In the normal category, the positive limit load is 3.8 times the gross weight. In the utility category, it's 4.4 times the gross weight. And in the acrobatic category, it is 6 times the gross weight. These limit loads should not be exceeded in actual operation, even though a safety factor of 50% above limit loads is incorporated in the strength of an airplane. How do you impose an extra load on an airplane during flight? Well, during flight, the wings will support the maximum allowable gross weight of the airplane. The airplane is designed and certificated for a certain maximum gross weight during flight. It's important that the airplane is loaded within the specified limits because if you overload the airplane, certain flight maneuvers will impose an extra load on the airplane structure. And if the airplane is overloaded, certain flight maneuvers will impose stresses on the airplane that will exceed the design capability. Overstressing an airplane can also occur if the pilot engages in certain maneuvers that create high loads, regardless of how the airplane is loaded. A change in speed during straight flight will not produce any appreciable changes in load, but when the change is made in the airplane's flight path, an additional load is imposed on the airplane structure. This is particularly true if a change is made in the direction at high speeds with rapid forceful control movements. There are certain laws of physics which state that a mass will continue to move in a straight line unless some force intervenes, causing the mass to assume a curved path. During the time the airplane is flying in a curved flight path, it still attempts, because of inertia, to force itself into a straight line. The tendency to follow a straight flight path rather than curved flight generates a force called centrifugal force, which acts outward toward the outside curve of the airplane's flight path. Anytime an airplane is flying in a curved flight path with a positive load, the load that the wings must support will be equal to the weight of the airplane plus the load imposed by the centrifugal force. A positive load occurs when back elevator pressure is applied, causing centrifugal force to act in the same direction as the force of weight. A negative load will occur when forward pressure is applied on the elevator control, causing centrifugal force to act in a direction opposite to that of the force of weight. A curved flight path, or curved flight producing a positive load, is a result of increasing the angle of attack and consequently the lift. Increased lift always increases the positive load imposed on the wings. However, the load is increased only at the time the angle of attack is being increased. Once the angle of attack is established, the load remains constant. Load factor is the ratio of the total load supported by the airplane's wings to the actual weight of the airplane and its contents. The actual load supported by the wings divided by the total weight of the airplane. For example, if an airplane has a gross weight of 2,000 pounds, and during flight, that same airplane is subject to aerodynamic forces which increase the total load the wings must support to 4,000 pounds, the load factor would be 2.0, which is 4,000 pounds, the load which was imposed, divided by the gross weight of the airplane, 2,000 pounds. 4,000 divided by 2,000 equals 2. In this example, the airplane wing is producing lift that is equal to twice the gross weight of the airplane. Another way of expressing load factor is the ratio of a given load to the pull of gravity. We refer to a load factor of 3 G's, where G refers to the pull of gravity. In the case where the weight of the airplane is equal to 1 G and the load of 3 times the actual weight of the airplane is imposed on the wings due to curved flight, the load factor would be equal to 3 G's. The approximate maximum bank for conventional light airplanes is 60 degrees, which produces a load factor of 2. An additional 10 degrees of bank will increase the load factor by approximately 1 G, bringing it dangerously close to a point at which structural damage or complete failure may occur in these airplanes. At an angle of bank of slightly more than 80 degrees, the load factor exceeds 6 G's, which is the limit load factor of an acrobatic airplane. When an airplane is banked into a turn, a portion of the vertical lift being developed is now diverted into a horizontal lift component. It is this horizontal or sideward force that forces the airplane from straight and level flight and causes it to turn. The reduced vertical lift component results in a loss of altitude unless total lift is increased by increasing the angle of attack, increasing airspeed, or increasing both. What makes an airplane turn? This is a question on the written test. What makes an airplane turn? The horizontal component of lift. As the angle of attack is increased to increase lift, the air will no longer flow smoothly over the upper wing surface, but instead will become turbulent or burble near the trailing edge. A further increase in the angle of attack will cause the turbulent area to expand forward. At an angle of attack of approximately 18 to 20 degrees for most wings, turbulence over the upper wing surface decreases lift so drastically that flight cannot be sustained and the wing stalls. The angle at which a stall occurs is called the critical angle of attack. An airplane can stall at any airspeed or any attitude, but will always stall at the same critical angle of attack. The indicated airspeed at which a given airplane will stall in a particular configuration, however, will remain the same regardless of altitude. Because air density decreases with an increase in altitude, the airplane has to be flown faster at higher altitudes to cause the same pressure difference between the pitot impact pressure and static pressure. In other words, because air density decreases with an increase in altitude, the airplane has to be flown faster at higher altitudes to give you the same indicated airspeed reading that it would where the air is more dense. An aircraft will spin only after it has stalled and will continue to spin as long as the outside wings continue to produce more lift than the inside wing, and the aircraft remains stalled. Since the load factor squares as the stalling speed doubles, tremendous loads may be imposed on structures by stalling an airplane at relatively high air speeds. An airplane which has a normal, unaccelerated stalling speed of 50 knots will be subject to a load factor of 4 G's when forced into an accelerated stall at 100 knots. As you can see, it's easy to impose a load beyond the design strength of the conventional airplane. There's a stall speed chart which shows the relationship between stall speed and angle of bank. You'll see that banking an airplane just over 75 degrees in a steep turn increases the stalling speed by 100%. If the normal unaccelerated stalling speed is 45 knots, the pilot must keep the airspeed above 90 knots in a 75 degree bank to prevent sudden entry into a violent power stall. The same effect will take place in a quick pull-up from a dive or maneuver producing load factors above 1 G. Accidents have resulted from sudden unexpected loss of control, particularly in a steep turn near the ground. The maximum speed at which an airplane can be safely stalled is the design maneuvering speed. The design maneuvering speed is a valuable reference point for the pilot. When operating below this speed, a damaging positive flight load should not be produced because the airplane should stall before the load factor becomes excessive. Any combination of flight control usage, including full deflection of the controls or gusty loads created by turbulence, should not create an excess air load if the airplane is operated below maneuvering speed. Caution that certain adverse wind shear or gusts may cause excessive loads even at speeds below maneuvering speed. A rule of thumb that can be used to determine the maneuvering speed is approximately 1.7 times the normal stalling speed. Thus, if an airplane which normally stalls at 35 knots should never be stalled when the airspeed is above 60 knots, 35 times 1.7 is 59.5. A knowledge of this must be applied from two points of view. One, the danger of inadvertently stalling an airplane by increasing the load factor, such as in a steep turn or spiral, and that intentionally stalling an airplane above its design maneuvering speed imposes a tremendous load factor on the structure. All aircraft leave two types of wake turbulence: prop or jet blast, and wingtip vortices. The prop blast or jet blast could be hazardous to light aircraft on the ground behind large aircraft which are either taxiing or running up their engines. In the air, jet blast or prop blast dissipates rapidly, so blast from a prop or jet is not that hazardous in the air as it is on the ground. Wingtip vortices are a byproduct of the production of lift. When a wing is flown at a positive angle of attack, a pressure differential is created between the upper and lower wing surfaces. Pressure below the wing will be greater than the pressure above the wing. In attempting to equalize the pressure, air moves outward, upward, and around the wingtip, setting up a vortex, which trails behind each wing. The strength of the vortex is governed by the weight, speed, and the shape of the wing. Maximum vortex strength occurs when the generating aircraft is heavy, clean, and slow. Heavy, clean, and slow. Clean means the configuration is such that flaps and or landing gear are retracted. Vortices generated by large aircraft in flight tend to sink below the flight path of the generating aircraft, fly at or above the larger aircraft's flight path in order to avoid the wake turbulence created by the wingtip vortices. Close to the ground, vortices tend to move laterally. A crosswind will tend to hold the upwind vortex over the landing runway, while a tailwind may move the vortices forward into the touchdown zone. To avoid wake turbulence when landing, note the point where a preceding large aircraft touched down, and then land past that point. On takeoff, liftoff should be accomplished prior to reaching the rotation point of a preceding large aircraft. Your flight path should then remain upwind and above the preceding aircraft's flight path.